The Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live.
Hey, welcome on in to the Brad Sesmatch Show. I'm Jordan Spurgeon. Brad just touched down in Philadelphia, so you can find all his coverage all over the website, all over social media. This is the Brad Sesmatch Show, brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their support. So Brad's in Philly for the NLCS, the Diamondbacks, and the Philadelphia Phillies. We're, of course, going to talk all about that here to start the show. Later in the show, I'll have Alex Weiner. He's a guy that you should get to know. He works at Arizona Sports. He's been covering the team all year long, all over their different radio shows, writing, social, everything. So he's a guy that's really been in tune. So I wanted to pick his brain a little bit on their matchup with the Phillies in the NLCS. So that's coming up in the third segment. Before then, we'll have John Wilner. We still got plenty of Pac-12 football to talk. Pac-2 maybe next year. Really wanted to pick his brain after the Washington-Oregon game, the top two teams in the Pac-12 this season. It's clear after that game they are the top two teams. So picked his brain on them and a little bit about the U of A and their quarterback situation and how they are continuing to trend upwards. So that's all coming later in the show. But for now, yeah, the Arizona Diamondbacks, they're in the NLCS for the first time since 2007. I know I've said this covering the games over the last couple series. It's if you predicted this in March, you were called crazy. There was no sign that this team was ready to take this much of a step forward, but that doesn't matter now. They're here. All that matters is that they go out and move on to the World Series. That's what it's about now. You could say, yes, the Philadelphia Phillies are favorites, and, you know, rightfully so. This team belongs as the favorite. They were in the World Series last year. They've got veteran leadership. They've got guys like Bryce Harper, like JT Realmuto, who really, you know, make it work over there in Philly. So, of course, they're favored. But for the Diamondbacks, you should have all the faith as a fan that this team is going to move on to the World Series. And if they don't, doesn't necessarily mean this postseason run was a waste, but it is something that I think Diamondbacks fans should look forward to, is this potential chance at the World Series. So tonight, game one, you get Zach Gallen versus Zach Wheeler. It's going to be a really fun pitching matchup this series. The difference is going to be which starters are able to go longer and which bullpen is going to continue to be able to shut the door when needed. Both of them have been nearly perfect so far this postseason out of the bullpen. The Phillies kind of had that weird game too, where they blew the game late against the Braves. It was just one of those things that it's just baseball. Things happen. It wasn't necessarily a loss that, you know, they did anything wrong. Just a couple bloop hits and a big one at the end is enough for them to lose one game, the only game they've lost this postseason. And the Diamondbacks haven't faced that adversity yet in the postseason, being 5-0. They've been nearly perfect in all phases of the game. So it's going to be an exciting series. Like I said, later on, we'll talk with Alex Weiner to really get some more in-depth look. But from what I see, from when I look at this Diamondbacks team, there's no reason to pick against them. I mean, right now, they're the best small ball team of the four teams remaining. They were one of the best small ball teams throughout the playoffs and throughout the regular season, especially when they were hot throughout the year. And that goes a long way in the postseason. Of course, we're going to remember the long balls in big situations of games at the end of games, or we're going to remember when they hit four home runs in the third inning against the Dodgers in game three at home. Those are the things that are memorable, but people don't remember. In game two, there was a sack bunt that then led to a sack fly that allowed them to get on the board early in the game in a three-run first inning. The sack bunt by Ketel Marte and a sack fly by Christian Walker. Those are the things that give these teams opportunities to stay in these games and eventually win the games as well. So that's something the Diamondbacks have going their way. Their bullpen's been nearly perfect, and the small ball and getting on base and doing things when runners get on base, not leaving guys stranded, has been really, really solid this postseason for the Snakes. So if they continue to do that, there's no reason that they should be in a position to lose this series, at least not easily, because the Phillies are a deeper, more talented, more experienced team. But the Diamondbacks are going to be right there without a fight. So really excited for that. Like I mentioned earlier, Brad Sesmat is going to have full coverage in Philly for games one and two. He's already there. The plane landed last night right out of Colorado. So he's checking out Citizens Bank Park. So you can follow him on social and see all his coverage on the website as well. I guess before we move on, you know, first things first, we'll briefly touch on the Arizona Cardinals. not much to say. They lose to the Rams 26-9. What can you say about them? Still waiting on Kyler Murray, whether or not he plays this season. I lean to him maybe playing the final 4 to 5 games. I mean, remember, he tore his ACL in, you know, the end of the season last year. So to come back in November, 10 months removed, would be amazing. So whether or not he comes back, that's really all that I'm watching for this year. Jonathan Gannon and his staff, they seem like they're building confidence in this team. I think they've hit their ceiling with Josh Dobbs. He's a nice story. He's going to be a great backup quarterback, but there's not much else this team's going to do. So I'll be honest, it was kind of a doozy of an NFL Sunday watching Red Zone this Sunday. I kind of was tuned out for most of it, and the Cardinals definitely didn't help that in the small slate of games yesterday in the afternoon, because there was just not much going on that was entertaining. So really not much to say about them. And the Phoenix Suns, I guess we could talk a little bit about them. The preseason tonight, the Blazers coming to town, DeAndre Ayton back. They already played them in Portland last week. Don't know if the starters will play today. I doubt they do. It seems like they're not going to be playing at home in the preseason. The only thing really left for this team is to cut the roster down. They have 17 full contract players right now and two others that could be on two ways as well. They got to get down to 15. So some of the role players that we've all gotten to know are going to be let go eventually. So that's really all that's left. I had a chance to go to the open practice yesterday, just sort of as a, not as a fan, but my girlfriend works for the team, and we were just able to go check out the open practice, have some good food up in the suites and in the Annexus Club, and go sit courtside for a minute and just see what practice is like from that situation. And it was good. Frank Vogel's intense. Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, they're locked in. You know, they're having fun and signing autographs for kids, you know, when they're taking little breaks and stuff, but they're dialed in at practice. And so this is going to be a team that just relies on health. So I'm sure we'll talk plenty of Suns this year. I don't care what I see from them until January or February. There's really not much to talk about other than how healthy are these guys going to be with Beal, Durant, and Booker. If they play 60 plus games, this team's going to be just fine come playoff time. So we'll talk about them later on, but that'll do it. D-backs tonight against the Phillies, NLCS game one. Exciting time here in the Valley. Coming up next in the show, we've got John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, talking Pac-12 football. And later after that, we have Alex Weiner from Arizona Sports talking NLCS games 1 and 2 in Philadelphia live from his hotel room. So stay tuned for that. That's all coming up next on the Brad Sessmatt Show. Welcome back. John Wilner joining me, Wilner Hotline. You can find all of his content over on the site. And John, I mean, we'll kind of look back before we look forward, but we had one of the biggest games in the Pac-12 this past weekend, Washington, Oregon. Washington pulls away there at the end and kind of lucks out with Oregon not able to clutch it up at the end. But what are your takeaways from that one?
Well, first, we had a game Friday night that included the fourth largest comeback in conference history, right? Stanford was down 29-0 at halftime and won in double overtime. And yet that would have been enough for the one weekend. But then all of a sudden, Oregon, Washington happens, and it exceeded the hype. I'm one of the most anticipated games we've had in ages. First time in that rivalry's history that both teams were in the top 10 at the time of the game. And it was better than expected. Just a fabulous game, you know, back and forth. It was high scoring, you know, 36-33, but not too high scoring, right? There was actually defense play. There were red zone defensive stands. There were, you know, big plays in the secondary. I liked the fact that it had balance, and it wasn't just like one of those 50-45 shootouts that just go back and forth one touchdown after another. And certainly it had a Heisman moment for Michael Penix, a Washington quarterback, that two-play touchdown drive that put him ahead. And it had controversy on the other side with Oregon coach Dan Lanning and his decisions on fourth down, either whether he was eschewing short field goals in favor of trying to get touchdowns, or the momentous decision, with about 2 minutes left, where he went for it on 4th and 3, basically in midfield, and couldn't get it and set up Washington's go-ahead touchdown, which it echoed the same mistake he made last year in the Washington game when he went for it on 4th and 1, like his own 34-yard line, and gave Washington the winning field goal as a result. And so it had everything and it has huge implications for the playoff and the conference title.
Yeah, I liked your tweets that you put out about Dan Lanning, where it's this game's 100% on me. And then last year, this game is 100% on me.
So. Right. I mean, you want your head coach to take responsibility. But the fact is, it mirrored exactly the same thing as last year. And he made a mistake last year, and he made the same mistake again this year. I mean, if you look at what was going on at that moment, right, Michael Penix was visibly hurting, right? He had taken some shots to the ribcage. He was struggling. Oregon's defense was playing very well. They had the momentum at the line of scrimmage. You punt from midfield, you pin the Huskies back, and you dare them to go down the field. Instead, not only did missing the fourth down give Washington a great field position, it also gave them momentum. It gave them a spark. I thought it was a colossal mistake.
These two teams still think they're the cream of the crop. It looks like it. USC with their loss, probably not up there. Utah's got their issues. Colorado, they're just the hype train now. They're not in that conversation, right?
They are. Colorado, yeah, they're the like kind of the opposite of Arizona right now. Arizona's playing very well. Should have beaten SC 2 weekends ago at the Coliseum, lost in triple overtime. Played terrific at Washington State. They've got momentum. Colorado is now just all show and all hype, residual hype from September. The reality is exactly what we kind of expected from them. They aren't nearly good enough at the line of scrimmage to win on a regular basis. And that loss to Stanford is going to make their bowl math very difficult because of who they got coming up. They still got to get two more wins, and they've got a very tough schedule in the second half. So, yeah, Colorado and Arizona, examples of two teams going in opposite directions.
One last thing on Washington and Oregon. I know you've written about it. When I have conversations with people that talk about the Pac-12, it's, okay, we see the path to a college football playoff team, but it is the Pac-12. You never know what's going to happen. It's the last year. All kinds of Pac-12 type things could happen, but do you see Washington or potentially Oregon actually getting the job done and finding a way to get a berth, or maybe even possibly two? I know that is something that could, not likely, but could happen.
You know, it would, the Pac-12 to get two in, that is a tough needle to thread because part of it depends on what happens everywhere else, right? Mm-hmm. That means that they're if Pac-12 is getting two in, that means there's only two other playoff-worthy schools in the rest of the country, right? And that's hard to believe when you combine Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State, Florida State, Oklahoma, right? Out of that group, there's probably going to be three. I do think, and I've thought from the outset, that Washington was a playoff team this year. And could Oregon make it? Yeah. I think the winner, if the Pac-12 produces a one-loss champion, that team's getting in. The conference is too good. That team will be ranked high enough to get in. Question is, can somebody get through with only one loss or zero losses? Oregon now has no margin for error, right? That's the biggest outcome from that game Saturday. Washington's situation hasn't really changed. They were on track for a playoff bid, and they still are. Oregon's situation has changed. They now have no margin for error. If they lose again, they're out of the playoff race, and it will be tough to get back to Vegas for the conference championship. If I were betting right now, I would bet on an Oregon-Washington rematch. I think they're the two best teams, but the Ducks can't lose again. That's the issue. If you get to two losses, even in league play this year, I think it could be tough to get to Vegas.
That's the issue in the Pac-12 in recent years. It's other teams kind of gouging. You know, you see,
yeah,
you know, it's like Colorado on track for a bowl berth, and then Stanford comes in and beats them, and now that right. might be one less bowl team in the Pac-12, and that could happen at the higher levels as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's eat your own every year.
One last thing there, too, before we move on, I want to talk Arizona as well. But Michael Penix, Caleb Williams on track for Heisman's. Caleb Williams falls a little bit. Penix rises. Do you think Penix has a legit shot to win the Heisman this year?
I do. Oh, I think he's the front runner right now. Absolutely. It'll depend. November, the Heisman's all about November. And he's going to have the platform. He's got the momentum now. He's going to have the big games in November and into early December to win it. If he plays well enough and they keep winning, I think he's got a great chance.
John Wilner, Wilner Hotline here with us. You can catch all of his content over on our website. Arizona, we talked about it earlier, kind of going opposite directions of a team like Colorado, figuring things out. Noah Fifita quarterback the last three plus games has been phenomenal. The comeback against Stanford, two great games against top 10 teams, and then pulling off the upset this week. What are you seeing out of him? What are you seeing out of this team?
Well, I certainly see two things. One, he's playing great. He's playing like a veteran. I don't care how healthy Jaden Delora is. Fafita's got to be the quarterback, right, at this point. And I see a defense that's greatly improved over last year, much better than expected, and is capable of you know, leading Arizona into a bowl game, right? It's still going to be a little tough. They had to get that win. I mean, now they've got the math got a lot easier for them, given their schedule, to get to six wins. But they're so much better at the lines of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, so much better on defense. And Fafita has not made the mistakes that you would expect from a freshman or that you'd expect from Delora, frankly. I mean, Delora makes a lot of mistakes for a veteran. And they got a running game. They got balance on offense. They got good lines of scrimmage. They got defense that doesn't allow a lot of big plays. I mean, they were close to beating SC. They could be 5-2 right now. So they're playing really well. They are a big surprise at this point. They are on the short list of biggest surprises in the conference.
Are you surprised at all that Jed Fish, now going into bye week, maybe he will finally make an announcement, but that he hasn't officially announced Fafita as the starter? Do you think it's a case of, well, Delora was our captain going in and all of this? You know, I even read the moment and watched the moment where Delora got a snap at the end, and maybe that was finally the passing of the torch to Fafita. What do you make of that? Because I hear chatter around town with different commitments and plugged into the high school scene, and a lot of them are kind of confused by that. It kind of makes them wonder why someone wouldn't commit to a quarterback who's played the way he has the last
year. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of that's internal dynamics. It's trying to respect Delora, because I think Delora is pretty well liked. Mm-hmm. And also knowing that you had that bye week, right? You could get by these last couple games kind of pinning it on Delora's injury and recovery. Now you got the bye week. It's time to pass the torch, no doubt about it. And it can be cleaner now that you have 2 weeks to do it, rather than when you're in the constant grind of one game after another. But I think a lot of it has to do with just respecting the veteran and Delora's role in the locker room, making sure all your internal dynamics are in place before you go public with it, right? Because you don't want to go public. You don't want to get out ahead of your locker room. You got to take care of in-house first. Now he's got 2 weeks to do that.
What are some of the storylines you're kind of interested in the back half of the season? I know the main one, Washington, Oregon, see how their paths play out and all that. But throughout the rest of the pack, what else are you really looking for right now?
Well, I'm curious to see what happens to USC. I mean, USC, right, they look terrible against Notre Dame, and they got a brutal schedule coming up. I think USC can finish like 8-4, 9-3, 8-4, not even sniff the playoff or sniff the Pac-12 championship game. I'm looking to see what happens at Utah. Two-time defending conference champions, is Cam Reinison going to get on the field, or is he just not playing this season? And if he does return, how many weeks is it going to take him to get back to close to 100%? That will have a big impact. Oregon, Utah, you know, they play SC. They also play Oregon. They're going to have a lot to say about how the race shakes down in November. And if Rising's healthy, then they are much more formidable. Certainly very curious to see the Washington State, Oregon State drama unfold on the field and off the field, right? They got the backdrop of survival, existential threat. How are they going to do on the field? Washington State's fading. Oregon State could end up being playing in Las Vegas. They're very good. They got two tough road games coming up, Arizona and Colorado, and then they finish the season with Washington and Oregon back-to-back. But that is clear. You can't escape that. I mean, that is the most dominant storyline in the conference in a lot of ways, is this backdrop of the existential situation and Oregon State, Washington State trying to be relevant on the field to help their case off the field.
I think that's one thing that always catches my eye, seeing what you do when you talk with Brad and everything that you're writing, is just, man, how the heck have we gotten here? Because this is some great play on the field this year, some of the best we've seen in the Pac-12. And here we are going into a year where next year it looks like we could even have a Pac-2. Is that the most likely case that you see right now?
I think Pac-2 is on the bingo card for sure. I don't know if it's the most likely, I don't know what is the most likely. A reverse merger with the Mountain West, I think, is going to eventually happen. I just don't know if it'll happen in time for next season. The court case is going to have a big impact on the whole thing. It is just very Pac-12 to have one of the best seasons in conference history playing out on the field against this backdrop of ash and ruin, mismanagement, terrible decisions, a lawsuit. I mean, it is just so on brand for this conference. It couldn't have been scripted anywhere.
John Wilner, thanks for your time. You guys can catch all of his content, Wilner Hotline, over on the site. Thanks, John. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much, Jordan.
Appreciate it. We'll be back with more after this timeout. Welcome back. Big game tonight. The Arizona Diamondbacks in the NLCS for the first time since 2007, taking on the Philadelphia Phillies. Coming in live from Philly, Alex Weiner, Arizona Sports, covers the Diamondbacks, doing a great job. We wanted to bring some fresh faces in. Obviously, I'm not Brad. He's someone you might not have heard of yet unless you're following Arizona sports, but someone that you should go follow on Twitter and check out for all this awesome coverage. First off, Alex, first time in Philly?
First time in Philly. Yeah, no, okay. Never been to the city before. Hadn't been to Citizens Bank Park before going to their workouts yesterday. So, yeah, totally new experience.
Have you gotten a Philly cheesesteak yet?
Not yet, but that will be, I'll have to before I leave, either today or tomorrow for sure.
All right, that'll be on the list. But of course, the main thing on the list there for you, covering these first two games in Philadelphia, it's going to be interesting for the Diamondbacks, right? You get your two best starters lined up with Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly to go. They'd go games 5 and 6 as well, according to Torrey, because they're not going to go on short rest. But how are they stacking up? How are you kind of seeing things stacking up ahead of game one tonight with the pitching matchup?
Yeah, it's Zach Gallen versus Zach Wheeler in game one. So those are two aces, two pitchers who have pitched very, very well in the postseason as well. I mean, Zach Wheeler had a good postseason run with the Phillies last year in their road to the World Series. He's continued that this year after a productive season. And then, yeah, game two, Merrill Kelly, it looks like it'll go against Aaron Nola. And then once you get back to Chase Field, then there's sort of more questions as far as, okay, it looks like Brandon Pfaadt will be game three. Who exactly is going to go game four for the Diamondbacks? The Phillies haven't announced their game four starter yet. Looks like Ranger Suarez will go game three. So there's still some pieces to figure out. It's a little different because, you know, with the NLDS, they had the days off so they can kind of reset things and go Merrill and Zach, you know, 4 to 5 games if it went the distance. This will be different because it's 7 games potentially in 9 days. So you're going to have to, you know, lean on a little bit of a longer rotation, which isn't something that the D-backs necessarily have at the moment. So yeah, it also just kind of harps on how important these first two games are with your top two starters going in Philadelphia and how vital potentially a split would be to go back home to Chase Field.
So off the bat too, I have to say this. I mean, Philly is favored for a reason. They should be favored in this series. That is not a knock on the Diamondbacks. It's just the way things are. Philly was there last year, but this Diamondbacks team has been impressive. To me, I've been impressed with Torrey Lovello's decision-making, especially with managing the pitching. He has a very short leash on everybody. Doesn't matter who you are. Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, Brandon Pfaadt. You're getting into trouble at a certain point in the game. It's gone like that. So that's something to keep an eye on in this series where I think the Diamondbacks could have an edge. But where are some places that you think, you know, Arizona really needs to do a good job in order to beat the Phillies 4 out of 7?
I think just, you know, to keep controlling the controllables, I suppose, would be a good way to put it. They've played a cleaner brand of baseball all season than the Phillies have, especially defensively. And that has carried over into the postseason with the Diamondbacks. I mean, they've played really clean baseball. They've had kind of, you know, limited the fat on with the pitching wise, as far as like putting runners on base and getting themselves into too many jams. They've gotten into some and they've gotten out of most of them at this point, but they've played, you know, as far as just like kind of making sure you're not beating yourself, that's something that the D-backs have done really well in this postseason. And they're going to have to against the Phillies, because this is a Phillies lineup that, you know, up and down. And Zach Gallen said this when asked about what stands out about the Phillies, is just like, they have power everywhere. So if you give them extra opportunities, an extra at bat here or there can make the difference if somebody, you know, gets a hold of one. So just continue to play clean baseball. The D-backs, you know, obviously they'll have this little bit of a on base on the bases advantage as well here, if they can kind of create some chaos. I know it's been mostly power for them in the postseason, which has been a little bit different than the regular season. But that's another way where, okay, if even if the power isn't quite there, if they can kind of manufacture runs by working a walk, stealing second, that kind of a deal, I think those two things will be something to look at as far as sort of differences between these two teams.
Yeah, they were the top team in baseball this year in bunting, in sack bunts, is what I believe I heard in the Dodgers series. And that was kind of the difference in that series. And especially now, where the Dodgers pitching was not necessarily bad, but the Phillies pitching, at least their starters, are kind of another step ahead of that. So I think that's something to keep an eye on, is kind of how they, you know, get into the small ball, because at this point in the postseason, you can't rely on the long ball. The home runs are going to come in big moments, and the team that usually hits the most in those big moments is the team that wins. But I think beyond that, it's who's going to make the small plays. And the Diamondbacks kind of do have an edge there. We've seen it all year with them, and it's a group that even the young guys, they kind of buy into that, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think just giving yourself opportunities to score is such a big deal here, because, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, maybe the home runs don't make the difference, but you know, so far in these postseason, I mean, the timely home run has absolutely mm-hmm. done that. And, you know, a 3-run homer in the fourth inning tonight could be just completely be the difference in how the series starts. So sorry about that. Anyway, yeah. So just getting yourself the opportunity, either like working walks and finding the right pitches. I mean, Mike Hazen has talked about it when asked about the power. It's just like they are finding the right pitches to hit. And that comes from kind of a mature approach, checking off the right pitches, fouling off the right pitches. So yeah, while they can certainly scratch off a few with, you know, small ball and creating opportunities, and that's a potential difference maker here, just continuing to have the mature at bats that they've been having, I think it's going to be huge.
Any concerns that you see going into this? Like, do you think the bullpen's been used a lot? Do you think that's even something that Torrey's concerned about? Like, you know, you're there in Philly. You got a chance to kind of be around the team yesterday a little bit. Any sort of concerns that you kind of look at and you're like, this might be something that could give them struggles in these first two games?
Not necessarily with the bullpen in particular. I mean, it's been a great unit over the last, mm-hmm. you know, 8 weeks now. And it's been terrific in the postseason so far. They've had a few days off. You know, we'll see what happens when they come back to it. You know, they had, you know, a scrimmage where they played like an inter-squad scrimmage the other day with the crowd noise pumped in at Chase Field, you know, some workouts, some bullpens. So Paul Sewald, I think, said the other day that it's not going to be an excuse having the layoff, just because they've had the opportunities to do what they've needed to do to stay sharp. But, you know, at the same time, it's a few days off and then right into this crazy environment in Philadelphia that a lot of them haven't experienced quite to this level before. So, you know, we'll see if there's any sort of lingering effect. I wouldn't think so necessarily. It's just mostly just going to be about execution. You know, as far as going down later in the series, what they do in games 3 and 4 and how they manage the pitching staff when they're not going to have their top two guys on the mound, that is more so where, okay, in my head, I'm like, okay, how are they going to piece that together? Because if those are two back-to-back days where you're going to be leaning heavily on the bullpen if you don't get a ton out of your starters, and we don't even know who both the starters are going to be at this point, that's where I have a little bit of a question.
Yeah, I think, you know, we both were in the room when people were asking Torrey about that, because it will be interesting, you know, looking ahead to games 3 and 4. You potentially have 40 plus outs to get with your pen. I mean, Brandon Fott's had a short leash and maybe he's earned a little bit of a longer one, depending on where the series is at that point, whether they're up 2-0, 1-1, down 0-2, coming into game 3. I think that could be a difference maker, but I think that's going to be the part of the series, regardless of what happens in games 1 and 2. I don't think, you know, that's going to be what seals the series, whether the Diamondbacks steal one in Philly or don't. I think games 3 and 4 and how that's managed is going to really be the pivotal point in this series. Do you kind of feel similar in that regard, just based on, you know, how they're gonna have to use it? Because the Phillies are in a similar situation. I mean, they have maybe an extra guy that they might, you know, trust to start necessarily, but it doesn't necessarily change things as far as, you know, how they're gonna have to manage the bullpen either. But I think that might be one of the big keys to the series, is how's game 3 and 4 work with the pitching.
Sure. And that's all set up by how games 1 and 2 go, right? I mean, yeah. If it's split in Philadelphia and then you can split games 3 and 4 and get back to your top starters, I think you feel pretty good. But if the Phillies win the first two and you have to rely on, you know, maybe a Brandon Pfaadt and a Ryan Nelson start and a heavy bullpen innings to keep you alive, then that might be a little bit different. So yeah, it's, it, you know, games three and four, again, it's just sort of the question on how they're going to approach it. I think, you know, we kind of know how they'd approach a Brandon Pfaadt start at this point. It's going to be 18 hitters plus or minus a few, depending on how he's doing. And then we'll see what happens in game four. But yeah, the tone will all be set by these first two games on how they can kind of approach the rest of the series.
Alex Weiner, Arizona Sports, here with us, a guy that you guys should be following. If you're following along this postseason with the Diamondbacks, doing great coverage all year long, and that continues here in the postseason. Just got a couple more things, Alex. And do you put any weight into the crowd noise? I know the guys, you know, they're never going to say, you know, oh, that's going to be tough. Like, they're there. They're like, oh, we're excited for it. And I think that's valid. Do you put any weight on, you know, how this crowd in Philadelphia is going to affect this team early on?
I think so, just because, again, the Diamondbacks have handled being in new positions as far as the postseason really well so far. But what they've also been able to do is kind of take out the home crowd. I mean, with the Dodgers, I mean, they jumped out 6-0 in the first inning of the first game, then 3-0 in the first inning of the next game. So they were able to kind of like take that advantage away a little bit. This is a Phillies crowd that, you know, we saw it against the Braves where just how crazy it got. That was, you know, that kind of had the added element of being a division rivalry game, and the Braves gave them some bulletin board material for sure. So maybe that was a little bit different, but yeah, it's going to be different. And, you know, when they practice with the crowd noise pumped in, they practice a lot of their nonverbal communication to try to make that sure that was sharp. So they're planning on it being a factor. So I don't think it's going to be just like something to, you know, just be like, eh, if it's noisy, it is what it is. But at the same time, you know, I think Christian Walker had this line yesterday where he said, you know, you want to get excited, but don't let that affect your execution.
That seems to be the mix of the perfect veterans on this team. Walker being one of the guys that's been around for a while. Evan Longoria seems like the perfect guy to spring into this team. I know maybe throughout the season, fans are like, why is this guy playing third base? He's old. He can't do this. He can't do that. But in the postseason, I think he's been maybe one of the most important players. He's made some great plays. He's looking kind of spry over there at third base, but the leadership and the way that he helps this team carry that, I think that, you know, has something to be said, because they kind of have that good mix of young talent that is wiser beyond their years. I mean, Corbin Carroll looks like a 10-year vet already. Like, the way he talks, the way he acts, like, he might act like a 23-year-old kid when they're celebrating and having all that in the clubhouse, but on the field, he looks like he's 33. So I think Longoria might be one of the guys that has kind of given them that culture this postseason.
Yeah, you talk about the mix. It's kind of ingrained in there at this point, right? Because you have the kind of the holdovers who were there the last time they made the playoffs, like Christian Walker, Ketel Marte, who have been through everything with them. Some newer veterans like Gallen and Kelly, who came on sort of during, you know, more of the down years a little bit. And then now this influx of young talent. And then they go out and get more veteran leadership, like you mentioned Longoria and then Tommy Pham and Paul Sewald. And so it's this great blend of, like, because we talk about how youthful of a team this is, but they really are reliant on some of these veterans, and have been this postseason for some major contributions. So yeah, I think you're totally right about how that has sort of created this culture where it's like an influx of young energy, but at the same time with guys who kind of know what they're doing up at the major leagues and have for a few years. And so I think that has all made them more dangerous this time of year in particular.
Gabby Moreno, good to go, it looks like. Is that the case?
Looks like he's good to go. Yeah, he took batting practice yesterday on the field. He said afterward that it didn't impact his swing after he got the hand contusion from the final game of the Dodgers series. And so it seems like they'll be all good as far as health is concerned.
All right. Last thing, I'll put you on the spot. If you don't have an answer, I'll let you cop out. But do you have a prediction how you think this series is going to roll?
Oh, boy, I get to cop out.
If you really want to, I guess I'll give you that option. I know your position, but if you want to make a prediction, why not?
Yeah, I don't make a ton of predictions. I mean, I understand why the Phillies are favored in this. I mean, they've been here before. They have the veteran lineup who has tons of postseason experience in it. And they got hot at the right time down the stretch of this. In the second half of the season, a lot of their star players got hot at the right time. And they have so many guys up and down that lineup who can change the series with one swing. So I totally understand that. At the same time, the Diamondbacks haven't lost this postseason yet. They're getting a little bit more of a power influx than they had. It's a little bit more uncharacteristic than what we've seen in the regular season, but the playoffs are different. It's a clean slate. So, would it surprise me if the Diamondbacks, you know, shocked everybody like around the country and did this? Not really, but at the same time, I understand why the Phillies are favored here.
Great stuff, Alex.
A little bit,
but I get the game. Well, appreciate you taking the time, Alex, from Philly in the hotel room. Have fun tonight covering the game. And yeah, everyone watching, you can follow Alex on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle? Is it Alex J. Weiner?
Correct. Yeah.
Boom. All right. Appreciate it, Alex. Have a good one. Thank you.
All right. You too. Thank you.